The news about Porter had unsettled Humphrey, and he kept to himself as the guards escorted them out of the tower and along a short path toward the palace. Just before they reached it, they veered right and entered a beautiful garden full of flowers. Given the desolation of the rest of the Kalahari, the garden seemed lush and exotic to Anya, and she found herself imagining that once, long ago, the entire Kalahari region had been like this. It was like a tiny moment out of time, and Anya was captivated by its beauty and innocence. Anya tensed, remembering the last time she'd heard such a cry. She glanced at Humphrey, hoping he might share some information about what to expect up ahead, but he was still absorbed in his own thoughts. The elephants, as it turned out, were around the next bend. Anya and the others emerged from the dense foliage to find themselves standing on the bank of the river, just upstream from the waterfall. A series of large rocks formed a shallow pool in front of them, and bathing in that pool was a herd of elephants. Anya smiled at the sight. She couldn't help it. She counted half a dozen adults in the water, tending to two baby elephants, while off to the right, near the edge of the bank, stood an older one, most likely the matriarch. Her tusks gleamed in the sunlight as if they had been polished. Sitting on a stool with his back to them, halfway between the water and where they now stood, was the elder. Almost as if he had eyes in the back of his head, he turned at their approach and then beckoned to them. Humphrey stepped forward as Anya was flanked by two guards and ushered along in his wake. Humphrey bowed when they reached the elder, then frowned when Anya didn't do the same. The elder didn't seem to notice and addressed himself solely to Anya.
I dreamed of you last night. I saw you in a great fire, holding a sword aloft as you stared through the flames.
Who is this guy?
I saw you standing alone in the ruins of Katsana, a look of sorrow and dismay on your face, as wind whistled through the empty buildings and the plants lay withered on the ground.
What do you mean I was standing in the ruins of this city? How did that happen?
I do not know what these visions mean, other than your destiny is somehow tied up with the destiny of our fair city. Because of this, I have no choice but to keep you here until the prophecy plays itself out, or until fate changes the path before us all.
For an instant, Anya considered drawing her sword, running the blade right through the man seated on the ground in front of her, and then making a dash for it. She didn't want to harm him, though. Didn't want to harm any of them, for that matter. She allowed them to pull her back, away from the elder, who sat watching her, emotionless. Humphrey and the elder had a brief conversation in the Sho's language, and then he was dismissed. Humphrey led Anya out of the elephant garden and back toward the tower. For several minutes, she didn't say anything. Then as they neared the tower, she turned toward Humphrey.
If you can get me out of the tower under some pretense or other, I can get us both out of here.
No.
No one will get hurt, I promise you that.
No.
Once we're free, we can bring the authorities down on Malcolm for what he did to your friend, Dr. Crane. Keep him from coming here, disrupting the lives of these people.
I said no, Miss Creed.
The entrance to the tower loomed ahead of them.
Don't you want to go home, Robert?
Humphrey stopped, then slowly turned and looked at her.
Home? This is home. And I won't let you destroy it.
They led her inside, up the stairs, to the room at the top, and then locked her inside once more. A little while later, Anya raised her head, frowning.
What the hell?
The tower began shaking violently.
No!
She stumbled forward, trying to reach the nearest window while fighting to keep her feet. Something big and dark went whipping past the opening. Anya threw herself to the floor just as bullets chewed through the wall and the window. Anya scrambled the rest of the way to the nearest wall and flattened herself against it, then rose and peered out the window. Her heart leaped into her throat at the sight that met her eyes. Black Hawk helicopters, at least three, were flying low over the town, gunners firing wildly as they strafed the buildings around them.
It's Porter! I have to stop him!
Anya rushed over to the door.
Hey! Let me out! Open the damn door!
When no one answered, Anya stepped back. The second the sword was in her hand, she tried the same trick she'd used before, sliding the blade between the door and the jamb, then using it to lever the bar out of the way. The bar was heavier than it had been before. So heavy, in fact, that she couldn't get it to move. Anya began hacking at the door with the sword. Bits of wood flew with each blow, but at the rate she was going, it would take hours for her to get through.
Hours I don't have.
She spun around, looking for another solution, and her gaze fell to the remains of the window. The gunfire from the helicopter had shattered the wooden bars, leaving an opening wide enough for her to slip through. She ran to the window and stuck her head out. From where she stood, she could see the choppers headed toward the far side of the palace. It wouldn't be long now before they were inside and in possession of the Heartstone.
Not if I can help it.
Anya looked down and tried to forget that she was three stories up as she examined the face of the tower. The stones had been carefully fitted and then sealed together with a thick coat of mortar. There were plenty of hand and footholds.
Climbing down shouldn't be all that hard, really. All I have to do is get out the window without falling and I should be fine. Oh well, the first step is always the hardest.
Anya used her sword to clear away what was left of the bars. Then she grabbed the chamber pot, unused, thankfully, and turned it upside down as a stepping stool.
They're attacking the palace!
Anya stepped up onto the chamber pot and leaned out the window. She drove her sword into the side of the tower as deeply as it would go, then braced herself with her right hand on the hilt. She put one leg through the window and reached over her head with her left hand to grab the wall, while at the same time finding a foothold that would support her weight. Pulling up with her hands, she eased the other leg out. Once she had found two footholds, she moved the hand holding the hilt of the sword to the face of the tower itself. Finally, Anya began climbing, hand over hand, down the face of the tower as fast as she dared, clinging to the wall like a spider. She had to keep reminding herself to slow down and move carefully, unless she wanted to get to the bottom of the tower fatally fast. Startled by the noise, Anya lost her grip. Before she knew it, she found herself hanging precariously by one hand as her feet scrambled for traction. One of her flailing feet caught the edge of a brick, and she steadied herself. Anya glanced down, trying to gauge whether she was still too high to jump, and finally decided that she was. A two-story fall was likely to break an ankle or leg if she didn't land just right. In the process, however, she spied another window, much like the one she'd climbed out of on the floor above, a few feet to her left.
Maybe that's a quicker way to the ground.
Anya eased over to it and peered inside. It was a room like the one she'd been held in. Opposite the window, the door stood open.
Yes.
There were wooden bars over the window, but that didn't stop Anya. She settled her left-hand grip on the wall nearby. The razor-sharp broadsword made short work of the barrier. Anya paused at the sounds coming from the direction of the palace.
Are the Sho fighting back with elephants? They're destroying the helicopters!
Anya shinnied through the window and dropped inside the room. Creeping across the room, she peered out the open door. No one was there, but better safe than sorry. Sword in hand, she stepped into the hall, descended the stairs, and ran outside. The gunfire had stopped. Anya didn't know if that was a good sign or not. It might mean there were no longer any targets worth shooting at. She hadn't seen the helicopters take off again from the other side of the palace, so that was where she decided to go. She followed the path the guards had taken her on earlier until she came to the rear of the palace. Spotting an open door, she slipped inside. Anya crept down the hall. A short passage opened up on her right, and she followed that until she came to a door. She put her ear against it and listened, but didn't hear anything. Anya had no choice but to push it slowly open.
No.
The door led into the audience hall. Bodies littered the steps before the dais. Most were Sho warriors, cut down where they stood by automatic weapons fire. Anya recognized Robert Humphrey and Lotto the Elder, lying in pools of blood. Behind the throne, the empty socket where the Heartstone had been kept glared at her accusingly. She was too late. Anya stood there, staring at the destruction around her, too paralyzed by sorrow and guilt to even react.
Lotto!
She rushed to his side and knelt beside him. He'd taken at least 3 bullets to the chest and stomach. By the volume of blood spreading out beneath him, Anya wondered just how much blood he still had in him. That he was still alive was a minor miracle. She looked for something to stem the flow of blood from his wounds, before realizing there was no way she could put pressure on all of them simultaneously.
Help! Somebody help me!
No one came. Anya did what she could, knowing it was futile, but she refused to give up. She tore several pieces of cloth from the elder's sarong and stuffed them into the wounds. Infection was the least of her worries. As she applied pressure to one of the makeshift bandages, his eyes opened. He stared at her, then grabbed her wrist in his aged hand.
Return the heart stone to the people, or we will all surely die.
He seemed to relax once he'd said it, and in the next moment, his body went still. Anya frantically tried to resuscitate him. It was only after she stopped giving him CPR that it dawned on her he'd spoken in English again. Across the room, a bloody and battered Nagamush stood staring at the scene. His gaze drifted from the elder's corpse to the hole in the wall where the heartstone had rested for generations, and then back to Anya. She didn't think she'd ever seen an expression so bleak. Humphrey's words came back to her.
The heartstone is a sacred religious object for these people.
Maybe I can still make this right. Isn't that why I carry the sword? To protect the innocent?
She hustled across the room, grabbing Nagamush's arm as she went past and headed for the front door. Once outside the front of the palace, the sight of the destruction stopped her in her tracks. The bodies of more than a dozen show warriors lay scattered on the lawn, along with the mashed remains of the helicopters. It looked as if a giant had used them as his playthings.
So where is Porter? The lift. It has to be. He couldn't fly out, so he's trying to escape with the Heartstone through the only other entrance to the valley.
Anya was about to rush off in the direction of the lift when Nagamush grabbed her arm. He shook his head and held out both hands. Then he put his fingers to his mouth. Anya spun around to see an elephant stomp out of the vegetation on the other side of the wrecked helicopters. It moved toward them. Anya could see where it had been hit by several bullets, blood oozing slowly out of the holes in its hide, but the injuries seemed to have done little to slow it down. It walked up to Nagamush. Then it bent down on one knee. The show warrior scrambled up onto the elephant, seated himself behind its head, then leaned down, extending a hand to Anya. She climbed up behind him.
This is a first, going into battle on an elephant.
She let her sword vanish back into the otherwhere, then wrapped her arms around Nagamush's stomach. He tapped the elephant twice on the head. The great mammal responded without hesitation, lumbering down the street in the direction Porter must have gone with his men. A few minutes later, they reached the base of the lift. Anya and Nagamush dismounted and raced over to the elevator mechanism, only to find their worst fears confirmed. The great wheel that powered the lift had been smashed, and the ropes pulled up to the ledge high above. The basket stood up there as well, effectively marooning Anya and everyone else at the bottom of the cliff.
Or so they think.
Anya took one look at the shattered mechanism and then turned her attention to the cliff instead. She estimated it to be maybe 3 pitches to the top, which would put it somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 feet. It was a long way to go without adequate protection, but there looked to be a fair number of hand and footholds.
If I'm careful, I shouldn't have much trouble. Except I don't have time to be careful. If I want to get the diamond back, I need to catch up with Porter. Once back in Maun, he can hide behind the walls of his estate outside of town, and I'll have a much harder time gaining access to him and the gemstone.
Anya caught Nagamush's attention and then pointed to the cliff. She did what she could to make him understand her plan by pantomiming climbing the wall and then throwing down a rope so he could follow. He nodded.
There goes nothing.
With that, Anya started climbing. To her surprise, the climb went quickly. She'd been correct. There were plenty of holds, and with the exception of one 10-foot stretch of glassy, smooth rock where she was scrambling for the next move, she didn't feel she was pushing the margins of safety far. She glanced down. Nagamush had sent the elephant away and was now climbing steadily behind her. He was doing all he could to save his people from a catastrophe.
In his position, would I have done any less?
Buoyed by his fearless determination, Anya climbed on. Her arms were shaking from fatigue when her fingers finally slipped over the top. With a final pull, she heaved herself up over the edge and rolled onto her back, closing her eyes in silent thanks.
Well, 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 look what the cat dragged in.
Anya opened her eyes and stared into the barrel of a pistol. Behind the pistol was a man in paramilitary fatigues and combat boots, one of Porter's men.
Damn.
Then Nagamush's hand came up and gripped the edge.
What the?
He swung the gun toward the ledge. Anya lunged forward, grabbed his ankle, and pulled with all her might. The bullet missed Nagamush by inches. He dropped the gun and flailed his arms. Anya gave Nagamush time to recover from his climb. Then they set out once more. Nagamush led the way this time, unselfconsciously taking Anya by the hand and leading her through the tunnels without the benefit of a light, not wanting to give them away if Porter was up ahead. As they neared the end of the tunnel, Anya made him slow down and advance more cautiously. Porter had already left one guard to watch the trail behind him, and she expected he'd do the same at this end. Anya didn't want to go blundering into anyone in the dark. But as they moved through the rooms of the temple, it became increasingly clear that they were the only ones there. When she stepped out into the canyon, Anya knew they were too late. Porter and his men had already disappeared. She turned to her companion. The look on his face told her he already knew. They had lost Porter, and in doing so had lost the Heartstone, dooming the Sho people to what they believed was certain death. The ones who were still alive, that is. Nagamush sank to the ground. He stared at nothing, his eyes full of tears. It was heartbreaking, and for the first time in a long time, Anya didn't know what to do or say. The words of Lato the Elder echoed in her head.
Return the Heartstone to the people, or we will all surely die.
There is no way I'm going to let it end like this.
Anya and Nagamush could catch Porter if he was on foot. If Porter had managed to find transportation, it was a different story. But for now, he was traveling in exactly the same manner as she was. Her best bet was to figure out where he was going and then beat him there.
If anyone can take me through these canyons, it would be Nagamush. The question is, where is Porter headed? How could I forget about that?
Kneeling in front of her companion, she gripped his shoulders and shook him gently until he acknowledged her presence.
This isn't over yet. We're still going to catch this bastard and return the Heartstone to your people.
Anya pointed first to herself and then to Nagamush. She tipped her hand upside down and with two fingers pantomimed the two of them walking. She then pointed to where she had abandoned the crippled SUV and where she hoped the other vehicles still remained.
If we can only beat Porter there.
Anya pulled a reluctant Nagamush to his feet, and the two of them set off to retrace the path Anya had taken before her capture by the Sho. The trek proved to be more difficult than she'd hoped. Nagamush was able to return them to the canyon where his people had first encountered her without difficulty. But knowing where to go after that proved hard to explain. After several frustrating attempts, Anya crouched down and drew a picture of an SUV in the dirt. She then pantomimed her driving it, steering left and right, and then pointing at the drawing. Something she did finally clicked. Nagamush pointed out a particular path and dragged her along. It was another hour's hike before they emerged from a canyon a short distance from the wreckage of her SUV. It was in sorry shape. Anya knew there was no way they were getting the thing to start, never mind travel all the way back to Maun in it. The other vehicles were gone. Just to be sure, they crossed the old riverbed and searched the bank above it. They found plenty of tracks where the vehicles had been previously parked, and Anya knew that this time they really were too late.
Porter's beaten us to the punch.
Anya was staring at the ground, wondering what to do next, when Nagamush nudged her arm and pointed. A few hundred yards away, a beat-up pickup truck pulled out from behind a large pile of boulders and slowly drove toward them. Anya tensed, ready to call her sword.
Please don't let them have guns.
The driver's door opened as soon as the truck rolled to a stop, and out stepped Dr. Henry Crane, a wide smile on his face. Anya hustled forward, wrapping the older man in a hug.
You are a sight for sore eyes, Henry.
Well, so are you. I've been waiting out here all night, worried sick. Then Porter and his mercenaries came blundering out of the canyon, and I thought for sure you were in trouble.
How long, Henry? How long since you saw Porter?
Half an hour. 45 minutes, maybe.
Anya grabbed Henry's arm and pushed him toward the truck.
We have to go. I'll explain while I drive.
Turning to Nagamush, Anya pointed at him and then at the truck. The implication was clear, but Nagamush shook his head.
Nina kurudi kasanda. Na kusa idea kuja ruiwa.
What? Do you know what he said?
He said he needs to return to Kasana, is it? To help the injured.
Good. That's good. Tell him I'll find the Heartstone and return it to his people. Tell him I promise. I won't give up until it's returned to them.
Anasema utapata moyo jiwe nakurudi kwa watu wako. Yeye ahadi yeye si kutoa juu ya mpaka ni akarudi na wewe.
Asante. Lakini ni tahari kwa kachelewa. Kurudumu ina akajiuka na sholazima kwenda nayo.
What?
He says, thank you, but it's already too late. The wheel has turned and the show must go with it. Anya, what is he talking about?
I'll explain as we drive. Get in! Nagamush, I will come back, I promise you. And I'll have the Heartstone with me when I do.
The show warrior smiled sadly. Anya jumped into the driver's seat. She nodded once to Nagamush, then turned the vehicle around and went north in pursuit of Porter. She glanced back in the rearview mirror to see Nagamush standing where they had left him, watching them. It was the last time she would lay eyes on the show warrior. As they drove, Henry filled her in on what had happened to him. After separating from Anya in the wake of his escape from Porter, he found a small cave to hide in. He waited until dark and then tried to make his way back to the trucks. Unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, he lost his way in the dark and wound up traveling in the complete opposite direction he should have been going in. After walking for several hours, he stumbled on a group of French zoologists who were studying the social behavior of the aardwolf. They were just getting ready to return to their home base in Maun, so Henry hitched a ride with them out of the wilderness. They dropped him at his compound on their way north. After calling the local authorities on his satellite phone, they gave him such a bureaucratic runaround, he had no faith they'd ever come out to investigate. He'd borrowed his foreman's pickup truck and returned to try to find Anya. He hadn't wanted to put any of his staff in danger, so he'd chosen to come alone. Afraid that Porter might return and find him, he hid the truck in a small canyon. He'd been lying in the shade of some boulders, watching the SUVs, when Porter and his men came stumbling up the riverbed. Henry stayed in place, waiting for them to leave, and then resumed his watch for Anya. He'd been about to give up and return to base when she'd walked out of the canyon with Nagamush in tow. When Henry was finished, Anya returned the favor, relating all that had happened to her after she'd led Porter astray. Henry was amazed by her tale, especially the part where she told him that she had found his friend Robert living among the show, except that he'd been gunned down by his own miserable excuse for a son. Arriving back at Henry's clinic, they took the time to decide what to do next.
We have to get back to the authorities with this. With your testimony, they'll act. We could have Porter arrested for murder and—
Do you really think the authorities will move against Porter? Given the kind of individual he is, do you think he doesn't have them in his pocket already?
You're right. Their response when I called them about my own kidnapping proves it. So what can we do? We can't just let him get away with this.
Trust me, I have no intention of letting him get away with anything.
Anya borrowed Henry's satellite phone and stepped out onto the deck for some privacy. She dialed a number from memory and waited for it to be picked up.
Yes, Anya?
Hello, Garin.
Have you finally decided to give up the sword and live a life of luxury with me?
Fat chance.
Well, then, I guess we don't have anything further to discuss. Good day, Anya.
Wait, please.
You are being polite, Anya. Is something wrong?
I need your help.
I am always happy to be at your service.
Anya explained what she needed and why.
And what do I get out of it?
You may have the pleasure of taking me out for dinner.
Last time I took you out, we nearly got killed.
What's life without a little adventure?
Adventure indeed. All right. Give me a few hours to arrange what you need.
Anya thought she could handle dinner with Garin if it meant she'd have the resources she needed to recover the Heartstone from Porter. Garin was one of two people, not counting herself, who knew about the sword. As well he should, since he had been there on the day Joan of Arc had died, had seen the sword shattered into dozens of pieces by an English soldier, the same sword that Anya now carried whole. Somehow Garin and his mentor, Rue, the man charged with protecting Joan, had been transformed by the sundering of the blade. They had lived and quarreled, off and on, for the better part of 500 years since, only coming to an uneasy truce when the blade had been mystically reformed in Anya's presence. Garin and Rue believed the sword was responsible for their extended lifespans, and they kept tabs on Anya at every opportunity. 3 hours later, as dusk was settling over the old mission, Anya and Henry were finishing up a meal in the kitchen.
Oh, no!
Anya laid a reassuring hand on his arm.
It's okay. They're friendlies.
Anya went outside to greet their visitors. The helicopter was black, which might have made it hard to pick out in this light if it wasn't for the bright gold logo of a dragon in flight painted on the side. That was the corporate logo for Dragon Tech Security, one of the high-tech defense and protection companies Garin owned and ran. Anya knew from experience that her backup would be well-trained and well-armed. Before the rotors had even stopped spinning, the passenger door opened, and a medium-sized black man with a shaved head and wraparound sunglasses climbed out. He was dressed in a set of dark fatigues and combat boots. He ducked beneath the rotors and hurried over to her side.
Mr. Griggs!
Miss Creed.
Shall we go inside where we can talk?
As my employer is wont to say, I am at your service.
The planning didn't take long. Griggs had arrived with detailed layouts of Porter's compound, including real-time satellite photos from less than an hour earlier, courtesy of Garin's connections in the aerospace industry. They used those to map out general scenarios that they would follow once on site. They spent some time discussing what they would do if problems arose, knowing that no plan ever fully survives contact with the enemy. Porter would not be expecting them, and that would certainly play well in their favor, but there was no doubt that something would go sideways at some point in the mission, Murphy's Law and all that, so they wanted to have a few fallback ideas. When they felt they had exhausted all the obvious possibilities, they moved to get the mission underway. Anya pulled Henry aside and handed him Doug Morell's card.
If something goes wrong, I want you to call this man. Tell him everything that's happened. He's the producer of the cable television show I work for and will have the connections to expose Porter and make him pay for what he's done.
Why aren't we just taking the information to him now then? Why the rest of this nonsense?
If we bring in the media, the show will never be the same. They'll be invaded by every jackass with a camera. Is that what you want for them?
No, of course not.
I'll be back soon. You probably won't even need the card. It's just in case. Understood?
Understood.
Excellent. I'll see you in a few hours.
The flight from the old Dutch mission to Maun didn't take long. Griggs kept at a steady altitude and speed, just another corporate chopper ferrying suits from a business meeting somewhere, and only seemed to wake up when they drew closer to the destination. Porter's compound was on the outskirts of Maun, a sprawling three-story home, a swimming pool, and several outbuildings surrounded by an 8-foot wall of solid concrete. There was a guard gate at the entrance to the drive, and according to the information they'd been given, foot patrols that covered the grounds at regular intervals.
I don't care if Porter has brought in the entire French Foreign Legion to guard his place. I'm going in and not coming out again until I have the diamond.
Coming up on 9:30 at my mark. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, mark.
Anya synchronized her watch to match Griggs's watch. Griggs took the chopper in a wide arc around the compound and then brought it down to hover a few feet above the ground in a clearing they had previously picked out. Anya stood by the rear door waiting for his signal.
Once you're in, you've got 10 minutes.
Got it.
If she was inside any longer, something had gone wrong. At that point, she was on her own. Anya pulled off her headset, gave Griggs the thumbs up, then slid the door open and jumped out. Even though it was only a few feet, she rolled with the impact, not wanting to end up with a twisted ankle at this stage of the game. She climbed to her feet, noting as she did that Griggs was already on the move, the helicopter climbing into the sky above her. It was lost in the darkness moments later. Looking around, Anya saw the lights of Porter's compound in the distance. Soon, Anya was crouched in the shadow of the compound's security wall, waiting for Griggs's signal. She took a pair of thick leather gloves and a set of nylon knee pads out of the backpack she was wearing and put them on. A glance at her watch showed her she had 30 seconds left. Stepping out of the shadows, she moved back 10 feet from the wall and got into position, counting down in her head.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2...
Anya started running as the final second ticked down. The sky lit up with flames of red and orange as the missile Griggs fired at the guardhouse hit home. Anya ran for the wall, put one foot against it, and pushed up. Her hands easily cleared the top, and she grabbed hold, the thick gloves protecting her from the broken glass seated along the top. She boosted herself up and over, and landed gently on her feet on the other side. The guards were most likely responding to Griggs' decoy attack out front, but she wanted to be sure. When she didn't hear or see anyone, she crossed the yard to the back of the house. According to the plans, she should be standing beneath the third floor balcony, and when she looked up, it was right where it was supposed to be.
So far, so good.
Griggs' second and last rocket struck somewhere out front.
That should keep them busy for a bit.
Anya reached into her pack and pulled out a device that looked like a sawed-off shotgun with a three-pronged hook stuck down the barrel. Anya pointed the weapon at the balcony above her and pulled the trigger. The hook shot up and over the balcony's railing. Anya tapped a button on the weapon's grip that caused it to release the line, leaving her with a rope secured to the balcony above. She grabbed the rope and swarmed up it, hand over hand. She climbed over the balcony railing.
Sounds like Porter's security team has finally gotten into the act.
Anya didn't waste any time, just stepped to the sliding glass door and tried the handle. Anya gave her eyes a moment to adjust. She had expected to enter the house through Porter's bedroom, and she took a second to verify that as soon as she could see clearly. Unfortunately, the room was empty.
His study, maybe?
She crossed the room and slowly opened the door. Then she slipped out into the hallway looking for her target. Anya knew she'd finally found Porter when she peeked through a door that was open just a crack.
What's going on out there? Bryant, what's going on? Answer me!
Porter threw his glass of scotch across the room.
Someone's got a temper.
Porter spun around, his eyes wide as he spotted Anya Creed standing in the doorway dressed in black.
You?
Yes, me. Were you expecting someone else?
What do you want?
Only a buffoon like you would ask a question like that. What do you think I want?
Porter didn't answer, but his gaze drifted to the diamond. Creed didn't even glance in that direction.
Is that what you think? That I want the diamond?
Why else would you come here?
Did you think you'd get away with it, Porter? Did you think I wouldn't come for you? Speaking of which, how did you track me back to the show village?
The same way we did the first time. While you were out from the Trank Dart, Bryant slipped a bug into your clothing that transmitted your location to us, that led us back to the tunnel the natives took you into. You stupid bitch!
You're the one whose entire world just got blown to Kingdom Come and you're calling me stupid? You're a sad, impotent little man.
Anya watched Porter carefully. His gaze flicked to the desk for the second time, and Anya realized he wasn't looking at the diamond at all.
Must have a gun in the drawer.
Porter's glances in that direction were a diversion, cover for his real target, which was the drawer of the liquor cabinet directly in front of him. Before Anya figured out what he was up to, Porter had his hand in the drawer and the gun out. Anya dove to the floor, rolled, and came up in a crouch, but her caution was unnecessary. Porter stared across the room with unseeing eyes. The blade of the sword was buried hilt-deep in his chest, pinning him to the wall like a butterfly on a corkboard.
That was a lot closer than I like.
Unpinned, Porter's body slumped to the floor. Anya stepped over to the desk for the heartstone. A pile of wrappings lay nearby, and Anya appropriated them for her own use. She wrapped the stone and then stashed it inside her backpack. A check of her watch told her she'd been inside for 6.5 minutes.
Time to go.
10 minutes later, Anya was in the clearing, climbing into the helicopter next to Griggs.
Any problems?
Meh, nothing I couldn't handle.
Early the next morning, they returned to the Lost City. At any other time, Anya would have gone alone. Maintaining the show way of life meant keeping the location hidden from the public eye, just as it had been for the past several hundred years. Given the size and value of the Heartstone, it was particularly important to keep it a secret. But Anya was worried. The Elder's prophecy had set her teeth on edge, and she was growing increasingly more nervous that something would go wrong if she didn't return the Heartstone fast. She had therefore planned ahead, requiring Garin to swear on his honor that he would not personally attempt to recover the diamond from Kasana, send another individual on his behalf to do it for him, or disturb the show people in any way. Anya knew Garin would rather die than break a sworn oath like the one she made him give, so she felt safe in asking Griggs to take her back. Because of the height of the crater, which blocked the sun in the early part of the morning, most of the city was still in shadow when Griggs brought the chopper over the walls and down into the valley. Anya was looking out the window as they descended, searching for survivors. She couldn't see anyone. The streets were empty, deserted.
Maybe the sound of the helicopter scared them into hiding?
Anya didn't think so. Griggs's chopper was much quieter than Porter's had been, and they wouldn't have been able to get everyone undercover that quickly.
Circle the palace once, will you?
The palace?
Yeah, that building over there.
Got it.
Griggs did as Anya asked, taking them in low and slow. The wreckage of Porter's helicopters lay right where they'd been abandoned, though the bodies of the dead had been removed from in front of the palace steps. That, at least, was a good sign. And yet no one came outdoors to see what the noise was about.
There's another clearing on the other side of the palace. Why don't you set it down there?
Roger that.
Griggs brought the chopper over the roof, giving Anya a view of the riverbank where she'd seen the elephants bathing in the shallows. There was no sign of them now. That, more than anything else, convinced her that something was wrong. Griggs set the chopper down without so much as a bump. Anya was carrying the Heartstone in a small backpack slung over one shoulder, leaving her hands free for her sword if she needed it. Griggs held an automatic rifle, scanning the building before them.
Hello? Nagamoosh? Hello?
Now that you've let everyone from here to South Africa know that we've arrived, why don't we see if anyone is home?
Did I tell you about the poisoned arrows?
Poisoned arrows?
Nah, didn't think I had.
Anya walked away from the chopper, heading for the door at the back of the palace she'd used last time she was here. Griggs hurried to catch up.
Just a moment, Ms. Creed. What's this about poisoned arrows?
Just don't get hit with one and you won't have anything to worry about, all right?
They reached the door and stopped, listening. Nothing.
Where did they all go?
I wish I knew.
They entered the building and cautiously made their way through the halls to the audience chamber. That was where she was supposed to return the diamond, and that, more than any other place, was where she expected to find someone who could tell her what was going on. But the audience chamber was as empty and silent as the rest of the city. The elder's voice seemed to echo through her mind.
I saw you standing alone in the ruins of Kasana, a look of sorrow and dismay on your face.
Anya shook herself, trying to rid herself of the chills that swept over her as she stared at the empty throne room.
Could the legends be true? Could the Heartstone be responsible in some strange and unusual way for the show's well-being and safety? If so, what will happen if I put it back? Only one way to find out.
Anya crossed the dais, stepped around the throne, and stopped in front of the empty socket on the wall where the diamond had rested for centuries. She slipped the pack off her shoulder and laid it on the floor. Kneeling next to it, she unzipped it and slid the diamond out.
Give me a hand with this, will you?
Griggs reluctantly did as he was asked. Together, they carefully lifted the diamond and held it up to the socket, then rotated it until it slid into place.
We good?
I think so.
Anya kept her hands close as they let go, just in case the diamond wasn't secured properly, but it stayed where they had put it. She let out a breath she didn't know she'd been holding. She had expected to feel better at this point, to feel some sense of relief now that she'd fulfilled her promise and returned the Heartstone to its rightful place. But all she felt was empty. She suspected she was too late.
This place is giving me the creeps. How about we get out of here?
All right, let me just...
Anya's gaze fell on the images painted on the dais to the right of the throne. Painted where they would only be seen by someone standing where she stood. As if in a trance, she stepped forward so she could see them better. Just as in the Canyon Temple, there were several different frames, all telling a sequential story. They appeared to have been drawn with a stick of charcoal. In some places, the image was already starting to smear or fade. The first panels detailed the attack on the city by Porter's men. Oval shapes with lines above them represented the helicopters, and they could be seen swooping over the buildings that made up the city. The stick figures lying in front of the palace steps represented the last stand made by the Elder's guards, and the two stick figures on the elephant had to represent her and Nagamush. But as before, it was the last image that made her eyes widen. The picture was larger than the others, as if the artist wanted to draw her attention to it immediately. It showed a long line of people, stick figures again, passing through the rush of the waterfall and disappearing from view.
You don't think...
Only one way to find out.
They searched the area around and behind the waterfall for more than 2 hours. But they didn't find any cave mouths or other locations where the city's inhabitants could have gone. They wound up sitting on the riverbank, wet, tired, and wondering just what the artist had been trying to tell them. Once before, the show had disappeared from history's notice, slipping through the hole in the world, as they called it, to find a new home here in the Lost City. Now it seemed they had done it again. Anya didn't know how it was possible, but then again, she'd encountered more than her fair share of unexplained events over the past several years, and decided that, maybe just this once, she didn't need to understand. It seemed that the show were safe, wherever they might be. And for now, that was good enough for her. She and Griggs returned to the chopper, and were soon airborne over the city once more. As they lifted out of the crater and turned the nose of the aircraft toward home, Anya looked back down at the city below her and wondered if she'd ever see the show again. Somehow, she thought she might.
Rogue Angel, The Vanishing Tribe is a graphic audio production. Rogue Angel trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited. Used by others under license. Copyright 2013, Worldwide Library. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication prohibited. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Bradley Smith, James Lewis, Thomas Keegan, Patrick Bussink, Danny Gavigan, Kenyatta Rogers, Ken Jackson, Yasmin Twazon, Joe Brack, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, and Dylan Lynch. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers. The Rogue Angel theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. If you enjoyed Rogue Angel, be sure to look for Lilith St. Crow's Dante Valentine and Jill Kismet series, John Zakor and Lawrence Ganim's Nuclear Bombshell series, and Christopher L. Bennett's Only Superhuman. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. A key, an ancient automaton, a race against the devil to the deep blue sea. It started in 48 BC when a centurion on a rescue mission for Caesar went down with a ship in a storm. With his last breath, he saw the object of Caesar's seafaring excursion, an accursed mechanical minotaur, hit bottom and start to walk away. While taping an episode of Chasing History's Monsters, TV host and archaeologist Anya Creed learns that her sometime friend and protector Garin has acquired an ancient butterfly key artifact, the kind once used to wind automatons, clockwork-style devices. Except this key comes with a rumor attached, a story that it once worked a god-touch device, both rare and unbelievably powerful. No sooner does Garin hold the key than it's snatched from his hands by a freewheeling historian who plays by her own rules, and she wants ultimate power, which could include the Sword of Joan of Arc. The quest for the key and the mythological automaton reunites Anya, Garin, and his old mentor Rue in Genoa, and pits them in a race across Europe to beat a foe as resourceful and skilled as Anya herself. Rogue Angel number 43, Clockwork Doomsday.
Graphic Audio presents The World of the Lupi, Bloodlines. Lily was in Washington, D.C., ostensibly to partake of some FBI training at Quantico. What she had on the rest of her plate scared her. Rule was infected with demon stuff. Her mother wasn't speaking to her.
Now you've brought pain to your family. You and that wolf man you're sleeping with. I'm glad he's dead.
The world was set up to be blasted with repeated doses of magic, changing everything, probably killing people. Demons were popping up all over. And an old one who'd been around since before the Big Bang wanted to destroy the Lupi, seize the Book of All Magic, and rule the world. And her feet hurt.
Ugh.
The World of the Lupi, Bloodlines.
Available now in graphic audio.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Matt Jensen 8, The Eyes of Texas.
By God, Moore, if you don't get up and go to another table, I'll kill you right where you're sitting.
I ain't going nowhere.
I'm going to count to three, and if you ain't out of that chair by the time I get to three, I'm going to blow your head off. One.
This ain't going to turn out good for you.
Two. Son of a bitch!
We've had three people killed in town today! That's a lot, even for Shady Rest.
The community of Shady Rest, Texas, has earned the unenviable reputation of being the deadliest town in Texas, if not in the entire United States of America. The name Shady Rest suggests a peaceful cemetery, and indeed, the population of the cemetery is growing nearly as fast as the population of the town, which seems bent upon reducing its number through almost daily murders.
What the hell, Dusty? Looky there! Stop the coach!
Whoa!
Damn!
What do you want?
What do you think I want? I want you to throw your money box down.
Are you crazy, mister? This here is the Van Horn and Shady Rest stage. We don't hardly ever carry no money.
All right, we'll just take whatever money your passengers have on them.
You men, throw down your guns.
What the hell?
Mister, I don't know who you are, but am I glad to see you. You just saved our bacon.
What's your name, mister?
It's Jensen. Matt Jensen. Where are you headed?
To Shady Rest. Tell the truth, mister. With Jim shot up like he is, I'd appreciate it if you would ride along with us.
I'm not gonna leave you.
Something has to be done, Mayor Trout. It has reached the point where decent people are afraid to be out on the street at any time now, not just after dark.
I agree. Something has to be done, but what?
Mayor Trout, I want you to appoint me to the position of City Marshal.
What?
This place is closed, as of now.
What?
Get all of your women down here now.
The hell I will? Are you crazy?
Get the women down here, now!
What is this? What's going on here?
All of the men, out now!
I ain't going nowhere till I get finished!
If you don't go now, you won't have anything to get finished with.
I tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go back in there and shoot that crazy woman.
I don't think so.
What? Who the hell are you?
The name is Jensen. Deputy Matt Jensen. And I'm here to help the Marshal, if she needs any help.
If she needs any help? Wait a minute. Are you telling me that that crazy woman in there is a Marshal?
That's exactly what I'm telling you.
What are you two boys doing here? Where's Mutt?
He's dead.
Dead?
Yeah. He was shot by a man named Matt Jensen.
And where is Jensen now?
He's back in Shady Rest.
All right, we're going to Shady Rest.
Why the hell do we want to go out there? We just left there.
Because we're going to kill Matt Jensen.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Matt Jensen 8, The Eyes of Texas.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220, or go to www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, or want the complete series now, check out our long-haul MP3 series sets, conveniently shipped to you on a USB flash drive. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.